Best Leaves Clues podcast with Robin Bailey and Al McDonald. Have you ever wondered what makes someone successful? What are they doing that's different? How do they achieve greatness? We believe that success leaves clues. In this series, we are interviewing very successful people from different walks of life to hear their stories. We'd like to remind our listeners that the views expressed in this podcast are those of our guests and not necessarily those shared by our hosts. Today's episode is sponsored by Life and Legacy Advisory Group. Discover our commitment to our clients. At Life and Legacy, building wealth, securing your family's future, giving back, and creating a lasting legacy are not just values, but a way of life. Let us guide you toward a future aligned with what matters most to you. We're also brought to you by Aria Benefits. If you're a business leader challenged with talent attraction, employee engagement, or supporting mental health, we can help. Use your benefits package as the key to unlock your workforce. Now here's your hosts, Robin Bailey and Al McDonald.
Welcome back to the Success Leaves Clues podcast. I'm your host, Robin Bailey, back at it again with my fantastic co-host and business partner, Al McDonald. Al, a great day of podcast we have here, and I'm really excited about the next one.
Yeah, me too. And just had a little bit of a chat before we started recording, before we hit record. And yeah, just really interested in hearing our guest's story and how she got to where she's gotten to and what she's working on. So I won't give away any of the secrets, but yeah, very interested in this.
All right, well, let's get started. We are thrilled to welcome Allison Sandmayer Graves, CEO of Canadian Women in Sport, to the podcast today. Allison, welcome.
Hi, I'm happy to be here.
Well, I want to say a little bit about Canadian Women in Sport, because from what I understand, you're on a mission to harness the power of sport so that girls and women everywhere can thrive. Through partnerships with organizations, governments, and leaders, they're driving change and building a better future for sports through gender equity. So that's awesome. We want to dive into that today. And why don't we start, because I always find it very interesting where people kind of came from. And some of the questions I love diving into is, who are the influential people in your life? Because during these conversations, we hear, you know, this person made a difference in our lives. And maybe you can even expand a bit further about, what are the roles that carried you into where you are today?
That is a fun question. I think I would start by saying that I am a social impact person. And I always have been since I was a girl growing up on a farm in northeastern Alberta. That was the thing that really lit my fire. It was a time where there were some really big and challenging things going on in the world. You know, I came into my teen years when apartheid was ending in South Africa, when there was a genocide in Rwanda. I found that all fascinating, as much as you can find those big, difficult global events fascinating, but they really stimulated my imagination and my conscience and my strong sense of justice. I think many kids have that really strong sense of justice. Well, I've parlayed that into a career. And so I've had people, I think, who really fed that interest over time, whether it's an uncle who was a lawyer who used to take me to events in the big city of Edmonton so that I could broaden my horizons a little bit and learn about what was going on in the environmental movement, or classmates as I pursued further education. And then I took that into my first major role, where I stayed for a long time at a very entrepreneurial international development organization that really had a focus on mobilizing young people, which connected to, again, my experiences. And some might find that very surprising. You know, how did I end up in the sports system? But for me, in this particular role, it's not so much about sport. Sport is the vehicle, but the goal is women's empowerment. And I certainly lived and experienced that as an athlete as well. So that combination of sport experience and the positive experiences I had there and that social impact thing really came together in this current role. And while I'm at it, because I know that there are some recruiters who are listening to this podcast right now, I have to give a shout out to the person who recruited me for this role here at Canadian Women in Sport. I wasn't looking for a CEO position. I didn't imagine myself ready for such a thing. I was really quite open-minded as to what my next role would be. I knew I wanted it to be in the nonprofit sector or connected to it. And when a recruiter calls and you're looking for work, you take that call and you have those conversations. And it was really them who convinced me that I was ready to take this role. And
can we name this person, this wonderful person?
It was Mark Atkins at Lighthouse Search out of Toronto.
Okay.
Yeah. I think for many women, we are taught to doubt ourselves or to not have the courage to take those steps. And he was someone who said, no, I think you're ready based on what I see. You're ready to go for this. So sort of a story of how did this role pique my interest and connect with what I feel like a path I've been on for a long time, but also having that person who is in that seat and capable of influencing me and influencing this organization, really finding that match.
Allison, we might be reaching out for an introduction to Mark because that sounds like the type of person that we would enjoy having a conversation with as well. You said a lot in your answer and you covered a lot of ground. And I want to go back to your talking about as a young child, these big global events that you've seen, and we're continuing to see these big global events. What are the lessons that you have carried forward and continue to carry forward in your leadership style and in your journey?
So I lead an organization that is in the business of big systems change. We're tackling some really complex problems in the sense that we are trying to transform the sports system in Canada to be more equitable and more inclusive so that more women and girls can benefit. And it's not just about them benefiting right now, but we know that sport participation in quality sport and safe sport, I should add, sets girls up for lifelong well-being, for leadership, for academic achievement, all kinds of good things, and that this can actually be a force for change in our society so that we have more women in politics, more women leading in businesses, on boards, what have you. And so the research is really there to support that, but we have to make the sports system live up to its promise by ensuring that there's extensive access and that the experiences that girls have while they're there is the kind of experience that translates into those outcomes. But as you know, sport is a big industry. It's a substantial cultural part of our society. It is both influenced by society and influences it in turn. And we are trying to create change within that system and really have been the lead organization in that space, working at it for 43 years. I've only been there for 8, but there's a long history here. So global poverty is one thing. I mean, we're not trying to solve global poverty right now, but we're still in the business of big, complex systems. And as an organization with a team of 20 and many supporters and others contributing to this work, you know, we're still in a place where our capacity and our ability to affect that change is finite. And so we have to get really clear on what it is that we can do and the best role that we can play in that and how we understand what our success is, knowing that it's kind of hard sometimes to see the change happening. And that's just a constant conversation. That's just work in progress all the time inside the organization. But in the meantime, I have a team of people who are like me, who have a strong why connected to this work. They may come with different skill sets or different vantage points on the work, but we're in a community together figuring this out. And that is always been the fun for me of being part of these big, knotty problems and being part of the solution there.
Allison, I shared a little bit previously that this is a subject that's close to my heart and I'm very interested in hearing from you about because I did coach my daughter for a number of years in girls hockey. I was going to ask you how long you've been in it, but you already answered that. You said you've done this for 8 years. Real quick, what do you think has been your biggest impact so far and the biggest obstacle in your way still to come?
I mentioned the capacity limits. So when I started, when I took this role, I was the only full-time staff member. We're a team of 1.5. We had some really fabulous, long-standing contractors. So we would get a grant and we'd say, here, make this happen. The organization at the time had just a fantastic reputation, had so much credibility, really had done some important work. But our capacity relative to the problem we were trying to solve, there was just such a fundamental mismatch. So that was an interesting thing to step into. And so as much as the why of the work, the purpose of the work brought me to the organization, so did the challenge of building something and really getting my hands into and figuring out how to take this organization and all of its assets and turn it into something more than it was at the moment. So I'll fast forward. We're a team of 20 now. So we're still small relative to the problem that we're trying to solve, but our ability to accomplish what we set out to and to set loftier goals and to achieve much more substantial impact on an annual basis and on a cumulative basis is really there. I'm not managing the books anymore, which is just a real win for me. But so I would say that journey has been probably the most visible or material sign of success and achievement in this space. And it's something I'm very proud of. I think we should say that sort of stuff more often. I would say we're in a strategic planning moment right now, and I'm so glad we are. I get to work with a fantastic board and a fantastic team on that strategic planning, because right now we, I would say, are seeking an inflection point for the organization. We have just been hustling to produce those results. I've called us like a 40-year-old startup, just like super entrepreneurial, quite opportunistic, chasing every opportunity, in part because I wasn't sure if this was a moment for women's sports, if the investment and the encouragement and support that we were seeing in the landscape was going to last. And so we were just going to do the most with that opportunity. And in doing so, I think we've contributed to it going from a moment to a movement. And so we recognize that actually there's a lot of opportunity ahead of us. So we might need to just calm down a little and get a little more focused, a little more directive in how we do it, invest more in our systems. I think like so many, whether you're a nonprofit or a private sector startup, there's so much energy that goes into just delivering the work and doing it. And as you grow and you have more people that you have to work with and through to get the work done, you really have to evolve your systems. And so these are some of the things that I'm really focused on. Do we have the right processes? Do we have the right people? And to answer that question, you know, where do we really want to focus our energies as we go forward? In the meantime, we're still applying for grants and committing to things. So we're on that little bit of a tightrope net right now of, you know, if we commit to this thing for the next 4 years, is it going to align to our strategy in 6 months? We'll see.
So in your answer there, you did use the word success. And I wanted to maybe dig down a little bit deeper into that. How do you think your definition of success has evolved throughout the time that you've had at the organization? And where do you see that definition guiding your leadership today?
I have two different ways that I would answer that question. I'll start with a definition of success for the organization and for the programs and the impact that we have. I should take a step back and just say really briefly, the organization, in terms of what we actually do, we do research. So we are looking at what is the state of inclusion for women and girls in the sports system, what are the best practices, what are the barriers? And so we provide that to the system. We do a lot of advocacy work broadly to really motivate people to care and act on this topic, but specifically also with governments to get them to change their policies and investments to support this work. And then we work hands-on with sport organizations and sport leaders who are the ones who have the power to really make the change, at a grassroots level, in our own communities, all the way up to our national teams. And so, you know, I think that when you're dealing with really complex problems, sometimes there's to wrestle that complexity into something that you can manage as an organization and contribute to. There's a process often of simplification and really choosing spots where you can make a difference. And when you work nationally, there can also be a tendency to make things kind of cookie cutter, right? So that you can replicate and scale. And there's always a process, a humbling process of discovering that it just doesn't quite work that way. And that if you're going to replicate and scale across so many different communities, across so many different provinces, all with their different strengths and limitations and cultures and idiosyncrasies, that figuring out how to work with them in a scalable way, for me, has led me to rethink how we define success. So I used to think about it and still do. This is an unlearning process of, okay, we're going to engage them in a program and we're going to take them from A to B. And when they get to B, it's going to look like this. What I'm really learning from the people we work with and from the team who's on the front line with them is that that just doesn't set us up for success, that we have to be really more open to success looking like change in many forms. So I'll give you a tangible example. We have a program that's 7 steps, go step 1, 2, 3, all the way to 7. And we have an idea, like once you get to 7, an organization will have had this change to their capacity, this change to their ability to really be more inclusive. It turns out that getting from step 1 to 7 is quite hard for a lot of these organizations. It involves a lot of change, and change management is bumpy and nonlinear and all of those sorts of things. And so we could say, okay, well, that's a failure. This program is a failure. But what we're actually seeing is that they're having different conversations. They're hiring different people. They might be moving people off their teams who are not aligned with a vision of inclusion and not capable of moving them forward. They are doing all of these maybe smaller things, but really powerful things that are actually contributing to the kind of progress that we're trying to create. And so that is really influencing me substantially, yes, in terms of how we design our programs and what have you, but also, you know, I think that I was kind of raised, if you will, in a workplace that was very workaholic, very striving, very celebratory of big, bold, top whatever leaders. And it's just this progress and the process of being in this organization, all the learnings it's brought, has really allowed me to look at success differently, in that it's not just about the top entrepreneurs or the top nonprofit leaders and this culture of excellence that's reflected in those. But there's so many more nuances to success that I'm just really leaning into and really enjoying, particularly as the team and as younger generations influence me in terms of how they view success. And clearly, I haven't gotten to a perfect definition of it for myself yet, but I'm enjoying the process of rethinking what success looks like, both in the work that we do and also in leadership.
I'm glad you asked that question, Al.
Yeah. And I've got so many more. And Robin, I could probably just take over. I don't do this very often, but I could probably just take over this whole podcast because I got so many questions for Allison. But I'm going to let you jump in because I've got lots more.
Well, hopefully this is going well enough for Allison that by the end, she'll agree to do round 2, maybe in a couple of months, you know. So if we behave ourselves and do a good job, maybe we get rewarded with another episode. I found it very interesting that you used the term unlearning. And it reminded me of, you know, you're 8 years into the business. We were celebrating our 20th year coming up very soon. And you do business a certain way. And you talked a lot about this, changing your approach. And sometimes it's humbling to realize, oh, maybe that isn't the right approach. And we are going through this exercise right now where we've always done things a certain way. And now our systems and our thoughts about how we do business are being challenged. And we're looking at new ways of doing business that have opened my eyes to, oh, well, the old way might not be the right way. Maybe there are better ways to do this. And I'd love to take that term that you said a little bit further. What are some of those things that you're focused on learning and maybe more importantly, unlearning right now that's shaping your approach to your leadership at the company?
Mm-hmm. I love Adam Grant's podcast about rethinking.
Great book.
That invitation is so powerful for us as leaders because there is a tendency, I think, once you've been in a leadership position for a while, to believe that you've figured a lot of things out and then your job is to impart that on other people. And you're going to get continuously humbled if that's your approach. But I would say the most significant test for me in that respect that's really brought that humility forward and that desire to unlearn forward certainly has been in the diversity, equity, and inclusion space. I know many leaders are engaged very meaningfully in what that looks like. When you are in the nonprofit space, and particularly in an equity and inclusion organization, the expectations are even higher. And if I'm being frank, we are an organization that was started in the early 80s. We were born of the white feminist movement. And I think there's been some really important work before I joined, and now we're making an effort to continue it. But the Black Lives Matter movement and the Every Child Matters movement in the Indigenous space, and you know, you can look in so many different spaces. In the last 5 years, I think that's been a reckoning for many of us as organizations and as leaders. And so it's been a very important and intentional journey for me of, yes, learning, but also unlearning, because we have a lot of things in the way we lead that are sort of coded in the way we lead, in what successful leadership looks like and sounds like and so on, that really are not working for all the people that are on our teams and that we are trying to serve in our communities and engage and work with in our communities. And so what I know is that there are many layers to that, and there's sort of like best practice of DEI. And then there's a more substantial questioning that I'm starting to lean into. I'm really enjoying, for sure, because it totally aligns with my values as a person and who I want to be as a leader. But there's a lot of unconscious stuff to unpack in leadership, and particularly for me as a very privileged leader. And so it's fun, but it's challenging. And I'm optimistic that this sort of work happening en masse among leaders in this space is going to lead us to a very different place in the future. And frankly, if we're not meaningfully engaged in it, I think we're going to get left behind.
I think you're right. I think a lot of people are going to be left behind unless you're willing to have that open mindset about learning new things and learning from different people and different sources. One of my things that I think about is, how do I become a better version of myself? And sometimes it's through a conversation like this, I come out a better version of myself. And I think if you're closed-minded and you don't think you have anything to learn at this, you know, point in our career, right, you're in senior leadership, then I think you are going to be left behind and maybe find yourselves on the out of the organizations, because moving forward, people want to see people with open minds and new ways of doing things and challenge the old ways. Because you're right, Allison, I started my career in 1996 and business looked a certain way. The businessman looked a certain way, and that has certainly changed since then. So I'm very excited about the future. I think you and I are both optimistic about what business looks like going forward in organizations like yours. So I'm going to be very curious and excited to watch you continue your journey.
Allison, I love that you said, when you brought up challenging some of that traditional mindset of what leadership looks like, give me your best example of maybe some of those things that were traditional, but that you've seen turned on its head, if you will. Can you think of one?
Oh, yeah, for sure. I'll do my best here. And I'm like thinking about our own organization as we do it. I think that maybe there's two different ways to talk about it. One is like a top-down hierarchical approach. I think a lot of organizations have moved past that already, but there's still vestiges of that. And I think very much thinking about, okay, how do we create systems of accountability, which are still so important in an organization, and ensure that plans cascade effectively from strategy down through the organization, all the way to people's individual roles, while also leaving lots of space for things to actually come bottom up and side to side and all the different ways. And so there are lots of norms, I think, that exist in leadership where it's like, well, I expect deference. I expect people to listen to me when I say things, da 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 da. But like, how do you create this mutual experience of building the organization together? Understanding that you have different roles to play. And yes, there's a hierarchy, there's still elements of that. Some organizations have done away with that. Ours has not yet. But how do you create space for everybody to contribute the very best that they can contribute to that environment? And so I say that in the sense that, you know, I grew up on the heels of a generation where that top-down hierarchy, that expectation of deference or like the relationship between the layers was just much more formal, much more traditional, much more rigid. And I think that One, we're going to get the best out of the new generations that are coming in and just the best results overall if everybody feels like they can really contribute to building these organizations, not just fulfilling a piece. But also, when we think about inclusion or diversity, but also specifically inclusion, as a white, able-bodied, cisgender leader, I need to hear from other people about what's going to work for them, what's going to work for community, a very close listening so that it's not my worldview really that's shaping the organization, but a diversity of worldviews and lived experiences that are shaping things. Similarly, if I can extend my answer, and this is very connected to the work that we do out in the landscape, is we're still working in a very male-dominated space in sport, and I know that's true of many industries, but really valuing different forms of leadership that are less associated with those traditionally masculine forms of leadership, where there's more openness to that, I guess I would almost call them like human, the human side of leadership, really recognizing that leadership does come in all forms. It's not always masculine, extroverted, etc. But we're going to benefit as a society and certainly as organizations when we recognize and honor leadership in so many different forms and so many different manifestations. And that's going to create space for more women to lead, more gender diverse people to lead, when we start to set down that idea of like leadership looks like this and sounds like this.
So you talked about, you know, it's still a male-dominated world, if you will, and there's still some of that structure. Can you just maybe talk a little bit about the unique challenges women face in this field in particular?
What I want to say, first of all, is that there has been a lot of progress, and I think it's visible progress in the number of women leading and coaching and the number of girls playing and the access compared to when I was younger. I can see it in my lifetime, the shift that's happening, and the research and numbers back that up. But the research and numbers also tell a story that there are still structural, systemic barriers to women leading and certainly to girls participating. But if we stay in the leadership space, the experience of being a woman in sport, leadership, so that can mean things like coaching right on the front lines. That can be, we use the word administrator. So that's, you know, someone in a sport organization, whether they're on salary or volunteer, who's designing sport, who's bringing it forward in that sort of office-based sense. Could be board members, board chairs as well, leadership in those spaces. The experience across many sports continues to be quite isolating for women, where women may be present, so the diversity is there, but they're not being valued or respected or listened to. So the inclusion piece isn't there. There's a sense of belonging. Women still get told that they just don't belong, period, literally to their faces, or they get told in other ways. The recruitment processes, the advancement processes are still very much favoring men. You know, women show up to coaching sessions and it's led by a man and they're the only woman in the room and there's 20 other coaches and they're handed a men's small shirt to wear. So some anecdotes there, but there's still a culture that has not truly welcomed women into it. And it is changing and there are lots of signs of that, but that culture is really pervasive and hard to change. There's a lot of misogyny, there's a lot of sexism, and then you layer on other things like racism and homophobia and what have you, and there's a lot of invisible barriers.
Well, you said a lot there, and I agree 100%. Again, I shared with you that I did coach my daughter's team, and that there is some systemic challenges to overcome, but I think there's also just, in many cases, misinformation and ignorance. Like sometimes, you know, you don't know what you don't know, so I'm sure that part of your effort is to educate people and just like... even from the time that I started coaching, like you just kind of learn some things and looking back, you kind of go, oh, wow, I can't believe I did that. Right. But you didn't know any different. Right. So there's part of that in it. So I think the fact that, you know, doing what you're doing and educating people is really helpful.
It is a big collective learning process that we're on, and I'm learning process too, as you say. Mm-hmm. What's really exciting, and I think you have to be an optimist to do this job, but there's lots of reasons to be optimistic. And one of those is that when this organization started, the conversation was just fundamentally different. It was about convincing people that this was a problem. Even when they could see it, it was like, this is not okay. It shouldn't be like this. We need to be better. And now the conversation is just totally different. It's not, is this a problem? Or you're telling me it's a problem, but I don't agree that it's a problem. To, okay, we agree. How do we move forward? And that really speaks to the fact that this hasn't been a core competency in the sports system. Ideas like equity and inclusion, specifically around gender, which is our focus, of course. So it's making the invisible visible. As you say, people don't know what they don't know. It's so normal. We don't see it even when it's happening. It's just the way we've always done things. So some of it is just saying, okay, let's just take another look at this. Let's look at it through a gender lens. How is this policy or this coaching practice or what have you working for girls? Is it working for girls? Is it working for women? Or does it actually put them at a disadvantage? Could there be something else that we could do that might make this just a really wonderful experience for them that they want to be part of? And typically, it actually doesn't diminish anybody else's experience. And in fact, it makes everybody's experience different and better. Sorry, not different, better.
Yeah.
And so a focus on inclusion, a focus on belonging, on creating spaces that really work for people, that's just going to make it better for everybody. Everybody's going to enjoy that sort of thing.
Well, on that note, Allison, you've seen this evolve over time and that continues. But what's your vision for the future of Canadian women in sport?
Oh, for the organization? I am very excited about where the sector is going overall. I think the introduction of women's professional sport in a much more substantial way, it's going to change everything. We've been part of pushing that forward by putting forward business cases and really supporting the community of folks in that space. I think so there's a lot there to play with as we move forward that is not just about professional sport in Canada, but how that is going to contribute to that culture shift that we're talking about, how that's going to translate into change right down to the grassroots level of sport, keeping girls playing so that they can get those lifelong benefits. So for us and our organization, I see us continuing to be at the forefront of this movement. I see us continuing to grow, not continuously, not forever, in the sense that, you know, we're never going to be a billion-dollar company, but I see us continuing to lean into our capacity for impact. And I am really possessed with the idea of, you know, how do we create the most impact possible with the resources that we have? How do we become the most effective organization that we can be? How do we focus on the greatest levers for change that reflect our superpowers as an organization? We've tried a lot of things. We've had a lot of success. We've learned a lot over the last 8 years. If I were building this organization from scratch today, what would we choose? I don't have the answers yet, but I'm really excited about answering those questions for us in the next 6 months and then continuously on from there.
Well, as you may know, Al does have a signature question that he asked on the podcast. And I think my question might have started delving to that about, you know, planting trees for the next generation. And, you know, I think I might have stole a little bit, but Al, I think we should still ask the question because Allison might have something more to add or something completely different.
Yeah, absolutely. And obviously, much of what you're doing already answers this. But yeah, we'll ask it anyway. And I'm interested in hearing what you say. And maybe it's something you're doing even totally on the personal side that is unrelated to your professional side. A society grows great when old persons plant trees in whose shade they will never sit. So can you talk about any proverbial trees that you might be planting?
I really appreciated the opportunity to think about this question. And the answer that came first to mind is the answer I'll give you, which is that I have boys. I have a 10-year-old and a 12-year-old boys. And it leads me to think a lot about what kind of men I'm raising and how much men are part, just in every respect, of the change that we are trying to create as an organization, the kind of world that I want to live in going forward, and what it means as a parent and the choices that we make as we're raising all of our children, You know, it's not just about raising young girls to be strong and confident and fearless in their bodies and in their minds, but also raising young boys to respect women and to value their leadership and to see them as partners and to champion and celebrate what women create in the world. And I've had a lot of fun introducing my boys to women's sports and to having the kinds of conversations that that leads us to, and then the kinds of observations that they make. You see the wheels turning and you see them engaging with the world in new ways, in ways that I think their previous generation as the norm didn't or didn't have the opportunity to. So I just encourage everyone out there, take your sons to those games, turn the TV on so that they can watch. This narrative of women's sports aren't as exciting, aren't as powerful, women athletes aren't as strong, therefore they aren't as good as male athletes. I challenge you to watch a professional women's hockey league game or a WNBA game or name your sport and come away with that conclusion. So let's expose our kids to a broader array of influences. And I can say what's happening in my household is quite surprising and delightful. And that is one of the contributions I feel I'm making to this world.
Well, that is a wonderful answer. And I'm really glad that you shared that with us. And that's, yeah, a little bit of a unique take from what you're doing. So really appreciate that.
Allison, for people who want to find out more about what you're doing or more about yourself in general, what's the best way for people to reach out?
Well, I always love to make connections on LinkedIn, so people can find me there. And then if you want to learn more about the work we're doing at Canadian Women and Sport, it's womenandsport.ca.
All right, awesome. Well, that does it for today's episode. We really enjoyed this conversation. As always, we hope you did too. If you have any questions for Al or myself, please feel free to give us a call or by joining the conversation on LinkedIn. And we saw it again here. Success leaves clues. We'll see you next time.